All right. What we will do now is say what I always say, and that, of course, is turn with me, if you will, the place where this week's Torah portion begins. Just almost, but not quite the beginning of chapter 32 of the book of Genesis, or Bereshit. And it's actually verse 4 that we're going to start at. And this is after the story of Yaakov when he gets his four wives and his 12, not quite yet, but we're going to get there, 12 sons, and then leaves the place where he's been with Laban for a couple decades plus, and now he's headed back home. But he camps along the route, and got one more major hurdle to deal with, and that's where this week's story portion begins. So verse 4 says, and sent Yaakov. Okay, so and sent Vayishlach. Okay, remember, and, we know that, the va, and then shalach, we know that word, right? The shalach is the term that's used to send out or put away. So when a man puts away a wife in Deuteronomy 24, that's shalach. And Jacob sent out, he shalached messengers before him to Esau his brother to the land of Seir in the field of Edom. And he commanded him, and he said, look, here's what you need to do. Say to my brother, my lord, Esau, thus says your servant Jacob. Notice the supplication. He's going to be really, really contrite and very submissive. I have sojourned with Laban, stayed there till now. I've oxen and asses, flocks, men servants, maid servants. I've sent to tell my lord that I might find favor in your sight. Now the messengers returned to Yaakov, and they said, well, basically we got good news and bad news. Well, that's not how he put it. They said, we came to your brother Esau, and moreover, he's coming to meet you. And he's got 400 men with him, which is, why would he have 400 men, right? Then it says, Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed. Now, this is always an interesting little phrase. Every time I go through here, I want to say, why is it that it says he was greatly afraid and distressed? Does that sound redundant? And Rashi and some of the Midrash indicates that there's two conflicting emotions here. And that's what's really, he's greatly afraid for his life, but he's distressed because the option is to kill his brother. So he's afraid of dying, and he's afraid of killing, or distressed about it. And he divided the folks that were with him into two camps, the flocks, the herds, and the camels, again, into two camps. And he said, if Esau comes to one camp and smites that one, well, just maybe the camp which is left would escape. And then it says, Yaakov says, oh, so he's praying here, in other words, oh, Elohim of my father Abraham, oh, God of my father Isaac, oh, Yahuwah, who said unto me, return unto your country and to your kin, and I will do you good. So, quick aside. First, note how he prays. He is reminding Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh of his own promises. And that is something we will consistently see among the patriarchs and those that are men of Yah. They will remind him that they are relying on his word, his promises. So, you said, return to your country, and I'll do you good. And by the way, he says, I'm not worthy of all the mercies, all the truth which you have shown. By the way, here's that other word, emet. Ha emet, the truth. So I've mentioned this before. Yaakov is associated in terms of the understanding of his character with emet, with truth. And here is one of those places where we see that. All the truth which you've shown to your servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. So deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and smite me, the mother, along with the children. And you said, here it is again, another reminder, I will surely do you good. I'll make your seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And he lodged there that night, and he took of that which he had with him a present for Esau his brother. So he's going to send some presents, a lot of presents, to Esau. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats. Notice there's a 10-to-1 ratio there, and that's evidently about right scripturally. One male handles about 10 females in terms of keeping the flock. And they don't need that many males, of course, which is why a lot of times you'll see the males that are offered up for food, and they don't last as long. 200 ewes and 20 rams, again, 10-to-1. 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by itself. And he said to each of those groups of servants, pass over before me, put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, the one that was in front, and he said, when Esau, my brother, meets you, and he asks you, saying, hey, whose are you, and where are you headed, and whose are these before you, here's what you say. They are your servant Yaakov's. It's a present being sent unto my lord, even unto Esau. And behold, he's also back there behind us. So he commanded the second, the third, and all that followed in the various droves, saying, in this manner you shall speak unto Esau when you find him. And you say, moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. Because he said, you know, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Afterwards I'll see his face, and peradventure he will accept me. So the present passed over before him. He himself lodged that night in the camp. So he's literally sending the presents over the day before. He's going to stay alone in the camp. He rose up that night. He took his two wives and his two handmaids, his 11 children, and passed over the ford of the Yabbok. Now notice it says 11 children. It doesn't say 11 sons, at least. That's the way it's rendered. And sometimes it's difficult to tell, of course, when the male gender is used. But 11 would seem not to include Dina, who's going to show up later in this portion. We know that Benjamin hasn't been born yet. So he took him, he sent him over the stream, he sent over that which he had, until Yaakov was left alone. And there it says he wrestled with a man, an Ish, until the breaking of the day. And this has always been a subject of lots of discussion, right? Who is he wrestling with? Is it the Creator? Is it a messenger of the Creator? Is it a man, a mortal man? Or, as some have suggested, maybe he's wrestling with his own evil inclination, with his fears, with another version of Yaakov himself. And, of course, the Hebrew word you'll hear there, the evil inclination, is the Yetzir Hara, the little... Remember the cartoons, the little angel with the horns on one shoulder that says, be afraid, be very afraid. Okay. Anyway, he saw that he couldn't prevail against him, so he touched the hollow, the person that was there, the Ish, touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Yaakov's thigh was strained as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, because the day is breaking. And response from Yaakov, I'll not let you go, except you bless me. So he said to him, what's your name? And a response, Yaakov. And he said, okay, your name shall be no more called Yaakov, but Israel, because you have striven with Elohim and with men and have prevailed. And another way to render this, and I kind of like it better, is you have the power of El and have striven with men, or essentially you have invoked the power of Elohim in your striving with men. Yaakov asked him, and he said, tell me, I pray you, your name. And the response, well, why are you asking my name? And he doesn't seem to have answered, but he blessed him there. So Yaakov called the name of that place Peniel, Peniel, for I have seen El face to face, and my life is preserved, right? Panim, of course, is the root for face, or plural, faces. My life is preserved. Now, it says, then the sun, Ha-Shemesh, rose upon him as he passed over Peniel, and he limped upon his thigh. And that is why, says the last verse in the chapter, the children of Israel don't eat the sinew of the thigh vein upon the hollow of the thigh, even unto this day, because that's where the hollow of Yaakov's thigh was touched, the sinew of the thigh vein. So, next chapter begins this way. Yaakov lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, here comes Esau, with him 400 men. And he divided the children between Leah and unto Rachel and to the two handmaids. He put the handmaids and their children at the front, and then Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph bringing up the rear. And he himself passed over before them, bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. And it says, now this is very fascinating. Obviously Esau seems to have been softened up a bit here, but verse 4 is one of the most famous, probably, of the jots and tittles in the book. In other words, these are the scribal notations. They do not appear in the English Bibles. I've yet to see one that even puts a footnote in there for them. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere, but most time they don't. But the scribal notation has 4 dots over the words for, and kissed him. And kissed him. And usually that's understood to mean you can remove that phrase from the dots from the sentence, and it doesn't change the meaning, which is true. He fell on his neck and they wept. But the question is why? And there is no shortage of speculation. You've heard it. I don't necessarily accept all of it. One of it is at least a little bit almost laughable. But the "and kissed him" part is fascinating. So Esau runs to meet him, embraces him, fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept together. So the question is, and the dots kind of may or may not clarify it, why? Is it an insincere kiss? Is it an ambivalent kissing of his neck? Is something else going on there? Probably the most weird of the Midrashim that I've heard is that, well, what happened here is the dots mean that God turned Jacob's neck to ebony or to ivory or to some kind of hard stone, granite, and Esau tried to bite him, but he couldn't do it, okay, which I've always thought was kind of silly. But regardless, when people ask about when Yeshua says he's not removing one yod or tittle, these are the kinds of things he's talking about. So it's an encounter, and it ends well, and that's a good thing. So he lifts up his eyes, and Esau sees the women, the children. He says, "Who are these with you?" In response, "These children whom Elohim has graciously given your servant." Then the handmaids came there, they and their children, and they all bowed down. Leah also and her children came near, they bowed down. And then came Joseph near with Rachel, and they bowed down. And he said, "What do you mean by all of this camp which I met en route?" And he said, "Well, to find favor in the sight of my Lord." Esau said, "Well, I got enough. My brother, let that which you have be thine, be yours." And Yaakov says, "No, you know, I pray you now, if I have indeed found favor in your sight, receive my present at my hand, because I have seen your face. For one as one sees the face of Elohim, and you were pleased with me." This is a blessing, in other words. So he says, "Take, I pray you, my gift, my blessing." Literally is the word that's used there in the Hebrew. The root word is rachat, that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and I have enough. And he urged him, and he then, in fact, did take it. And he said, "Let's go take our journey. Let's go. I'll go before you." And Yaakov's response was, "My Lord knows that the children are tender. They're young yet. The flocks and the herds giving suck. They're nursing their young ones. They're a care to me. And if I overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. So let my Lord, I pray you, you pass over before his servant. I'll go on a little bit more gently, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir." And Esau said, "Okay, let me now leave with you some of the folk that are with me. And, well, why we need to do that? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So he didn't leave the men, it doesn't sound like. And Esau returned that day on his way up to Seir. Now, Yaakov then journeyed to Sukkot. And we know the name, we know the town, and it's an interesting place. He built a house and made booths for his cattle, so that's why they call the place Sukkot, for the booths that were there. And Yaakov came in peace to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, where he came from Padan Aram, and he encamped there outside the city. Then he bought a piece of ground, which he had spread his tent at before, from the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of kesef, of silver. And he erected there an altar, and he called it El Elohe Israel. And Dinah, the next chapter begins, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne unto Yaakov, went out to see the daughters of the land. Now, that's an interesting way to put it. She's going out on a woman's night out. It's not clear exactly what's going on here, but the point is she gets in some trouble. Shechem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the land, saw her, and it says he took her. Lachach is the Hebrew root word. That means he took her and he basically lay with her. And he humbled her, it says. Now, that word there, too, is actually anah. And humbled her may be kind of an understatement. He defiled her. He afflicted her. Some will say he raped her. And that, honestly, is not clear. It's not clear whether this was rape or consensual. But regardless of whether it was one or the other, the point is the brothers were upset, and they thought it shouldn't have happened either way. Now his soul did cleave unto Dinah, daughter of Yaakov, and he loved her, the damsel. He spoke comfortingly unto her. So it doesn't sound like rape, or if it was, maybe he decided afterwards he was sorry. Anyway, Shechem then spoke to his father, Hamor, and he said, "Get me this woman, this damsel, to be my wife." Now Yaakov heard that Dinah, his daughter, had been defiled by this man, and his sons were out with the cattle in the field. Yaakov, though, held his peace until they got home. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to speak with him. So the fathers are getting together. And the sons of Yaakov came in from the field when they heard about it. And all the men were grieved, it says. They were really, really PO'd, because he had done a vile deed in Israel in lying with Yaakov's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. Hamor spoke with him, and he said, "You know, the soul of my son Shechem just longs for your daughter. I pray that you give her unto him to be a wife." And you all can do some great stuff here. You can make marriages with us, give your daughters to us, take our daughters unto you. This will be all wonderful, right? Now, by the way, the interesting root word there in Hebrew is has the same meaning as father-in-law. So it's kind of fascinating. The word that is rendered as marriages in English, and it's hatachat, is kind of sort of expressed as to take a daughter-in-law or to make a father-in-law. All right, so you dwell with us. The land will be before you. Dwell and trade here and get yourself some possessions here. Shechem said unto her father and to her brother, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I'll do that. I'll give it to you. So give me your request, right? How much dowry do you want? I'll give it. I'll give according to whatever you say to me, but just give me the damsel to my wife. The sons of Yaakov answered, and they spoke to Shechem and Hamor, the father, with guile. They lied. And they spoke because he had defiled Dinah, her sister, and they said unto them the following, we can't do this thing to give our sister to someone who is uncircumcised, because that would be a reproach to us. So on this one condition we'll consent to you, if you will be like we are, every male of you be circumcised. Then we'll give our daughters unto you, and you can take your daughters to us, and we'll dwell with you, and we will become a people, Am Echad, one people. But if you won't do that, if you won't hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we'll just take our daughter, and we'll get out of Dodge. Their words pleased Hamor, and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man didn't really hesitate, it says, to do this thing, because he had delight in Yaakov's daughter, and he was honored above all the house of his father. So the people of the town of Shechem thought highly of Shechem, and Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of the city. They spoke with all the men there, and they said the following, these men are peaceable. They're peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land, trade here, for behold, land's large enough for them and for us. We'll take our daughters, we'll take their daughters unto us for wives, and we'll give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us here, though, and to become a people echad, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Shall not their cattle and their substance and all their beasts be ours? Just let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. Now, that's an interesting take, too, and it sounded pretty good up until this point. Won't their cattle and their substance and their beasts be ours? Almost like they're going to take it. But on the other hand, having raised goats now for a while, I do know at least one element that does not sound necessarily surreptitious or underhanded, and that is if they've got lots of cattle, lots of sheep, lots of goats, lots of camels and other animals, and they're bringing them in, that is a good, fresh bloodline. They'll know that they'll be able to trade animals and that their flocks and their herds will be strengthened by the addition of these new bloodlines. So that's a possible thing that's not necessarily underhanded. That would just be a benefit to everybody. Now, unto Hamor and unto Shechem, his son, they hearkened, all the men of the gate of the city. Every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. So they all did it. Came to pass then on the third day, they were in some kind of pain. Two of the sons of Yaakov, Shimon, Simeon, and Levi, Dinah's brethren, okay, in other words, by her full brothers, took each man his sword. They came upon the city unaware, and they slew every single male. They slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, Lefi Cherev, and they took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and they went forth. Sons of Jacob came upon the slain, they spoiled the city, because they had defiled their sister. They had made her Tameh, in other words, in the Hebrew. They took their flocks and their herds and their asses. They took everything that was in the city and that which was out in the field, all of their wealth, all their little ones and their wives. They took all of them, the captive, and they spoiled everything that was in the house. So they looted the city. Yaakov then said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me. And I think that's probably an understatement. I suspect he raised his voice at him a bit. You've made me odious. You've made me stink to the inhabitants of the land, even the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I, being few in number, they'll gather themselves together against me and smite me, and I'll be destroyed, I and my house, meaning you guys too. Well, they said, should someone be able to deal with our sister as if she was a harlot? Elohim then, in the next chapter, says to Yaakov, and it's not clear how much time elapses here, arise, go up to Bethel, dwell there. Probably not a whole long time, though. And make yourself there an altar unto Elohim, who's appeared unto you, who appeared unto you when you fled from before the face of Esau, your brother. So make an altar to Elohim, who basically helped you when you called on him. Then Yaakov said to his household and all that were with him, put away all these strange gods that were with you, and purify yourselves, and change your garments. So let us arise, go up to Bethel. I'll make there an altar unto Elohim, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way in which I went. So he's going to go do exactly as requested. They gave unto Yaakov all the foreign gods, the fake gods, the wood, the stone, the gold, everything else that were in their hands, the rings that were in their ears, and Yaakov hid them under the terebinth tree, which was by Shechem. So really pretty close to where they looted them. So then it says Yaakov came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan. Same place is called Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. So we've been here before. He built there an altar, called the place El, Bethel, because there Elohim was revealed unto him when he fled from the face of his brother so many years ago. Deborah, Rivka's nurse, died, and there she was buried below Bethel under that oak, and the name of the place was called Alon Bakut. And there it says, Elohim appeared to Yaakov again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him. And here we go. Now, notice this is the second time we're seeing this renaming happen, but this time it tells us it is Elohim that's doing it. Your name, he said, is Yaakov. Your name is Yaakov. Your name, though, shall not be any more called Yaakov, but Israel shall be your name. And he called his name Israel. And I've mentioned this many, many times, but I think especially here it bears repeating. Twice he has been renamed. And interestingly, he is the only major figure, certainly only one I can think of in Scripture, that has been renamed. And yet after his renaming, for the most part, he continues to be addressed by both names, as if there is a significant scriptural component or understanding associated with the name Israel and the name Yaakov. And as a matter of fact, you'll note sometimes, even a matter of fact, a lot of times, it uses both names in the very same verse with things that are similar and related but just slightly different. So it's kind of fascinating to see this renaming and the fact that unlike Abraham, his grandfather, for instance, when he's renamed from Abram to Abraham, Abraham he stays. All right, Elohim then says to him, Ani El Shaddai. Ani El Shaddai. I am, it's translated as God Almighty. I like the all-sufficient El, okay? Be fruitful and multiply. There's the very first commandment in the book. A nation and the company of nations shall be from you, and kings shall come from your loins. And the land which I gave unto Abraham and Isaac, well, to you will I give it, and to your seed after you will I give the land. So Elohim went up with him, from him in the place which he spoke with him, and Yaakov, it says, set up a pillar there in the place where he spoke with him, a pillar of stone. He poured a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. And Yaakov called the name of the place where Elohim spoke with him Bethel. And they journeyed from Bethel. There was still some way to go to Ephrath, and it says Rachel travailed. And she had hard labor. So she is going to deliver a son. We probably know his name. And we know the outcome is not going to be that great for her. Came to pass when she was in hard labor, the midwife said unto her, fear not, for this is a son also for you. And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, because she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni. In other words, the son of my sorrow. But his father called him Ben-Yamin. So generally, we see that the wife names the son. That's often the case. Was the case with her before, but in this case, after she passes, he's going to give the son probably a better name that's less associated with the travail. So Rachel died. She was buried there on the way to Ephrath. The place you may have heard of, it's called Bet Lechem, house of bread, A.K.A. Bethlehem. Yaakov set up a pillar upon her grave, the same is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. And as far as I can remember, it's probably still a tourist attraction. I'm not sure whether it's the exact same one. They probably believe it is, but in any case, it is in Bethlehem. Israel journeyed. Notice, it's Israel this time. And he spread his tent beyond Migdal Eder. And it came to pass, while Israel was dwelling in that land, that Reuben, oldest son, went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Israel heard about it. Now it says the sons of Yaakov were 12. Interesting. Okay, we know who the 12 sons are, and I guess the question that I would ask is why? Well, I think the answer is because we're going to see that later there are going to be some additions and subtractions, and this incident is going to cost Reuben, especially the double portion of the firstborn son. And now we're going to get the enumeration, however. Okay, sons of Leah, Reuben, Yaakov's firstborn, and Shimeon, or Simeon, and Levi, and Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. Sons of Rachel, Yosef, and Benjamin. Sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali. The sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. These, it says, are the sons of Yaakov that were born to him in Padan Aram. And then it says, Yaakov came unto Isaac, his father, in Mamre, to Kiriath Arba, the same place is called Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned. And now it tells us the days of Isaac were 180 years, and he died. And he was gathered unto his people, old and full of days, and Esau and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. Now, chapter 36, and I'll go through this fairly rapidly. We won't necessarily read all of it because there's a lot of genealogy and lots of names and places. But essentially, we're going to see that the genealogy of Esau, the same as Edom, it says, obviously is important. It merits an entire chapter in Scripture. So, Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan. Remember, these did not please his mom and dad. Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah. Anah, remember, that's the same word that we saw before that meant defiled. The daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Basemath, that was the third one. When he saw the first two didn't please his parents, he went and got a different one from Ishmael's family, sister of Nebaot. And Ada bore to Esau Eliphaz, Basemath bore Reuel, and Aholibamah bore Yeush, and Yalam, and Korah. These are the sons of Esau, born in the land of Canaan to him. So, Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, all the souls of his house, all of his cattle, all of his beasts, all his possessions which he'd gathered in the land of Canaan, and he went into a land far away from his brother Yaakov. And why? Well, because their substance, and we saw this with Lot and with Abraham, their substance was too great for them to dwell together. Simply the land of their sojournings couldn't handle all of them. The load carrying the bearing capacity of the land was not sufficient for the number of animals that they had. So Esau dwelt in the mountain land of Seir. Esau, it says, is Edom. So we're going to hear the genealogy here of the Edomites, and it's made this point very clear. They come through Esau. He is Edom. And here are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, and the land, the mountain land of Seir. All right, so we'll go through this fairly rapidly. The names of Esau's sons, Eliphaz, son of Ada, wife of Israel, of Esau, Reuel, the wife of son of Basemath, and the sons of Eliphaz, his, in other words, grandsons of Esau, were Teman, Omar, Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Now, there's an interesting kind of a sidelight in here. We're going to see this name. We don't often get the names of the women, except in this case, in the case of Edom, we're going to hear all three of them. But also, there's a woman named Timnah, and Timnah means restrained. And the Midrash suggests, now we don't know this for sure, but it sounds reasonable because we do see a reference here in a few minutes, that she was a pagan, maybe even a pagan princess. And that might account for her being named and for some of the issues, but you're going to notice some things about this woman. Timnah was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bore to him a name that you might recall, Amalek. So that's a big name. Not necessarily a name to be proud of either. Remember, Yah will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So one of the things that's a little bit confusing to folks, but it bears pointing out here, Amalek is a subset of Edom. So not all Edomites are of Amalek, but all of Amalek are Edomites. These are the sons then of Ada, Esau's wife. And there are some listings of the sons of Reuel, Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, Mitzah. And then we have the sons of Aholibamah, daughter of Anah, and she bore to him Yeush, Yalam, and Korah. These are the chiefs, it says, of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz, firstborn, and it lists the names, the same names we've just heard. The chief of Teman, chief Omar, chief Zepho, chief of Kenaz, of Korah. And finally, Gatam, chief of Amalek. And then we have the sons of Reuel that are listed. They're also chiefs. And the sons of Aholibama, they're chiefs. These, it says, are the sons of Esau. These are their chiefs. The same is Edom. That's the third time that it's told us that Edom and Esau are the same. And that seems to be a very important issue. Edom, of course, is going to appear prominently in Scripture, the Edomites. The sons of Seir, the Horite, the inhabitants of the land, include Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, and Anah. There's that name again. And Dishon and Azer and Dishon. So two a Dishon and a Dishon. These are the chiefs that came from the Horites, the children of Seir in the land of Edom. And then it says the children of Lotan were Hori and Hamam, and Lotan had a sister, Timnah. So there's that woman. Notice these are chiefs of the land already. And then there are some children that were listed, the children of Zibeon and the others. This one of them is named Anah, the Anah who found the hot springs in the wilderness. These are the children of Anah, Dishon, Aholibama, the daughter of Anah. So now we're getting full circle. And the children of Dishon, Hemdan, Ishban, Ithron, and Cheron. And we list their children. These are the chiefs that came from the Horites. And we know the names Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishon, and Dishon. The kings that reigned in the land of Edom, these are they that were there before there reigned any king over the B'nai Israel. Now, Bela, son of Beor, reigned in Edom. The name of his city was Dinhabah. Bela died. Joab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his stead. So now we're going to get the lineage of the kings of the land of Edom. Jobab died. In his stead, Husham reigned. Husham died. And he smote Midian in the field of Moab, and in his stead arose Hadad. He died, Samlah reigned in his stead. He died, Shaul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. He died, Baal-Hanan of Achbor reigned in his stead. Baal-Hanan died eventually. Hadar reigned in his stead. His city was named Pau, and his wife's name was Mehetabel, daughter of Matred, the daughter of Me-Zebab. These, it says, are the names of all the chiefs that came of Esau, according to their families, places, their names. The chief of Timnah, chief of Alva, chief of Jetah, of Aholibama, Elah, Pinon, Kenaz, chief of Taman, chief of Mibzar, Migdiel, the chief of Aram. These, it says, are the chiefs of Edom, according to their habitations in the land of their possession. This, it says, is Esau. Esau, the father of the Edomites. So quite a lengthy understanding here of the genealogy, so it is important, of Edom, and it makes this point again and again. Esau is the father of the Edomites.